Welcome to another exciting episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the Brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The Brothers Anderson are, this is Eric.
By the way, you know, when you're telling these little stories, here's a good idea. Have a point. It makes it so much more interesting for the listener.
This is Brother Jay.
You ask me if I have a God complex? Let me tell you something. I am God.
This is Drew.
There is a storm coming like nothing you have ever seen! And not a one of you is prepared for it!
So sit back, close your eyes, and let us take you away. Unless you're driving, in which case keep your eyes open and watch the road and, you know. Anyway, welcome, this is Eric.
This is Brother Jay.
This is Drew.
Tonight, by popular demand, we're going to tackle The Dark Crystal from 1982.
It has to have been like 30 years since I've seen this.
Yeah, the last time I saw this was probably on VHS.
Well, most definitely.
I own the DVD for sure. And I watched it. I've watched it in the last decade for sure. Easily.
And this is on your list, Drew.
I love this movie.
Really?
This is one of my favorite childhood movies.
Well, it's good that you can inflict it upon your children in an appropriate fashion.
Well, there's a thing about this. Did you read what Frank Oz said about the tone of this movie?
No.
It was Jim Henson's intention that they wanted to get back to the darkness of the original Grimm's fairy tales because they thought it was, or Henson thought that it was unhealthy for children to never be afraid. So the fact that parts of this movie are legitimately scary is part of the roller coaster that is the life experience.
Well, his premise to this that they were crocodiles with jewelry.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, good job by him, because I watched the first part of this movie with my 6-year-old and 5-year-old, and they were genuinely scared.
Yeah, I tried to ease my 8-year-old into it, and she was like, nope, I'm good. Okay.
I recall it being pretty scary for me, and I would have been, you know, I don't know how old I would have been.
10? I think I was maybe 6 or 7. But so, luckily, yeah. I've been brought up on inappropriate horror movies. So this is fine.
That's a good thing. You were desensitized at an early age.
Yeah. So Jason, what's your first reaction to watching it again? What do you remember about it? You remember being scared, but...
I remember being scary. It wasn't scary this time. I had a hard time watching it. It was, first of all, the first time I saw Jen, I just thought Team America. And then that's all I could see the rest of the time I was watching this. It was Team America, so. So lonely. Anyway, it was dark. I don't remember being as dark. I'm guessing that I wasn't able at 10 to appreciate how dark it really was. And when I saw it, there was no way I got any of the symbolism or meaning. There's no way. But watching it now, it was not real subtle and kind of preachy. And it just seemed super slow. So I kept checking how long it had left because I was anxious for it to be over.
Oh, no, I had the opposite experience. I loved every second of it. I loved the fact that, and thank you for the iTunes version, because it's beautiful. It's the restoration.
It really is.
It's so beautiful. And the sets are so elaborate. There's so much going on. I mean, I love puppetry. I love the whole... The scale of from little tiny puppets to big, huge, like costumed things. I mean, the big crab things you saw, they had.
Did you watch the special features?
I did not.
So they were talking about how they had to have the choreography. And some of those costumes, some of the puppets, there was 3 people inside.
Oh, sure.
One doing the legs, one doing the left side, and one doing the right side. And they would have this little teeny tiny monitor inside to see what they were doing. basically, but they couldn't see anything else. So they didn't really know what else was going on around them. They just kind of had to assume that they were doing the right thing. So the scene where they're all at the table eating, they said that most of that was improv. Because there was just no way to have choreographed any of it.
It's beautiful, though. That's the magic of Jim Henson.
Having to pick up the little rolly treats on the table, they couldn't see them. And so these things are rolling across the table that they're trying to grab, and they can't see them. So they're just hoping that they get it right. I mean, I give him credit. It was elaborate. It was certainly impressive from the standpoint that it was all practical, pretty much. Everything was real.
Yeah, I told Journey there's no animation in there, and then I saw some animation. I'm like, okay, there's no computer animation in there.
Yeah, but there's very little animation, and it is mostly all practical effect. Yeah.
Great. And it took conceptual artist, Brian Froud was concept artist.
He talks a lot in the special features.
Yeah, I imagine. He designed this whole world. It's beautiful. It's so amazing. I love the Skeksis are so... They're so layered in like, darkness.
Well, they each have their own personality, but that personality and outfit corresponds to the outfits of the caretakers.
Yeah, the mystics.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, no, it's all a thing. This is the Dune that I wanted. They didn't explain very much at all, but you didn't have to. You just kind of lived in that world.
Did you notice that the mystics all had specific names depending on their role?
I did not. Did they mention the name? No, they must not have.
No, but it was in the credits.
Oh, well, that makes sense.
Yeah, the only name I remember is Chamberlain.
Yes.
He was the...
Exactly.
Skeksis, dude. Yeah, this movie, I'm not objective about this movie. This is one of my favorite childhood movies. I still love this movie. I reference so many things to this movie, even today. Like, if somebody's looking really rough in my head, I always think, oh, they kind of look like a Skeksis today. Or the little podlings. Especially now that I have children and they're around other children. Sometimes you see children who's like, their features aren't fully formed yet. And in my mind, it's always like, oh, they kind of look like the little podlings from the Dark Crystal.
The potato people.
Yeah. Yeah. I love Fizzgig as a kid. I always remember him. I always thought the Landstriders were super cool. Makes me wonder why I didn't have any Dark Crystal toys. They must not have like doubled down on the merchandising for the Dark Crystal.
Well, I don't think Jim Henson was big on merchandising when he was alive.
Exactly. That's the thing. There was a big controversy. Not controversy. There was a big...
Hubbub?
Well, yeah. I mean, it limited his ability to get funding.
Hullabaloo?
kerfuffle? No.
Some controversy.
Yeah. When this movie was finished, they did some test screenings. And it did not go over well. And so the production company was actually just sold. And the new owners are like, oh, no, we don't have faith in this at all. So they were going to shelve it. So Henson had to buy back the rights and distribute it on his own. Which worked out well because I think it was a $15 million budget and they made 40. So they at least made its money back. It was not a gigantic hit. But you know what else came out that summer? Or that, actually, you know what else came out that week?
No, what?
E.T.
Oh, geez.
Ouch.
Yeah, I looked on the Academy Awards to see, well, who, this movie wasn't even nominated for special effects or sets or costumes or anything. And then I looked and it's like, oh, well, Blade Runner was that year. And there was something, Tootsie, I think, and something else was that year that was, it was pretty, pretty serious, so
that's rough, man.
Well, it's fine. I mean,
now we did not see E.T. together.
I want to say I saw E.T. with maybe the Hesses or something, or God, it was.
I know that I saw it with Nikki Hess.
Oh, no, I must have gone there too, yeah.
I remember Mom and Dad went to go see it by themselves.
Oh, that's so weird.
Like, we had a babysitter. I don't remember if it was maybe Grandpa. Somebody came and hung out with us while Mom and Dad went to the movies. It was weird, because that hardly seems ever happened.
Made up.
Where do you think they went?
I don't even ask. Don't ask, don't tell.
Oh, man. 82, man. 82 is Blade Runner, E.T., Conan the Barbarian, The Thing, Fast Times at Ridgemont High, First Blood, Tron, Annie, Grease 2. Well, no one cares about that. Poltergeist, Gandhi, An Officer and a Gentleman.
Gandhi.
The Dark Crystal, Sophie's Choice, Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, 48 Hours, Diner, Cat People, Rocky III, The Verdict, Pink Floyd, The Wall, Tootsie, The Year of Living Dangerously, The King of Comedy, Friday the 13th, Part 3, Creepshow, Secret of Nim, Zapped, The Beastmaster, The Last Unicorn, Death Wish 2, Swamp Thing, Night Shift, the Victor Victoria.
Holy crap. They could have just dropped the mic on the 80s and just walked away.
The World According to Garp, Halloween 3. This 82 was happening. The Best Little Horror House in Texas.
When I was done watching The Dark Crystal on iTunes, it had that little strip down on the bottom of my Apple TV. It said, viewers also liked, and it had a few movies and had The Never Ending Story and The Secret of Nim. I was like, fuck yeah, they did.
Wow. 82 was amazing, but The Secret of Nim came out in 82. This came out in 82.
This is a much
Last
better
Unicorn.
Never seen
it. I mean,
you've never seen The Last Unicorn?
I've never seen The Last Unicorn. I wonder.
How have you never seen?
Because I was too old, I think.
Man, The Dark Crystal, Secret of Nim, and The Last Unicorn, that is series of movies.
I didn't like The Secret of Nim, though. You got to remember.
Okay, but you saw this when it came out, and this is the same year as The Last Unicorn, so how can you say you were too old for it?
Again, I don't know. I mean, I missed it. It must not have been on heavy rotation.
I remember seeing Tron with Uncle John.
Yeah, me too.
I watched The Last Unicorn like probably 50 times, so.
Oh, yes, I know.
You must have had better stuff to do as a 13-year-old.
I don't know, yeah. God knows. Also, I don't want to think about it. So, shall we get into the plot?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty simple.
A thousand years ago.
It's not a complex movie.
Well, it's as complex as you want it to be.
Oh, yeah.
That's the beauty.
I'm not complaining.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the story itself, I mean, the criticism people have with the movie is it's been called a watered down J.R.R. Tolkien. But I think it's so beautiful, and there's no singing, which is the best part of it. Fuck the Hobbit and the
except they had the little pod people Emmett Otter's Jug Band in the middle of it.
I love Emmett Otter's Jug Band. You don't understand. I can still sing the Riverdale Nightmare Band song. I can sing it and have in the shower.
Wait, watered down Tolkien actually sounds like perfect.
Well, exactly.
Tolkien is kind of dense and sometimes a mess.
Well, the for good or for bad, I have finished Dune the book. So
is it good or bad? I mean, we're going to talk about the miniseries next week. How long is it?
It's a good book. It's about 20 hours.
Okay. All right. So it's a little too long for me to listen to it a week. Unless the stomach virus gets worse.
I mean, between that and the dead hand.
Well, I bought the dead hand, so.
Oh, yeah. We'll have to chat about that after the movie.
So, 1,000 years ago on the planet Thra, a magical crystal cracked and two new races appeared. The malevolent Skeksis, who used the power of the dark crystal to continually replenish themselves, and the kind wizards called Mystics. Jen, an elf-like Gelfling, was taken in by the Mystics after his clan was killed. He is told by his Mystic Master that he must heal the crystal, a shard of which is held by the astronomer Agra. Voiced by Billy Whitelaw from Hot Fuzz. If he fails to do so before the planet's three suns align, then the Skeksis will rule forever. Now right there, that's a nice bit of setup. Didn't take too long to do, and it explains where everything needs to go. You didn't have to have Picard playing the crazy sitar.
Bally set.
Yeah. But the Skeksis, which you get to see a lot of, and
I see you laugh, Brother Drew.
and the Mystics. By the way, do you know why the Skeksis, although you don't really see the Skeksis too much, but the Mystics, you see that they have two sets of arms? You know why they have two sets of arms?
I just thought the Skeksis?
Both of them, actually.
The Mystics. Well, I thought they said three arms.
They had four arms.
Oh, okay.
I only saw three.
Yeah, the Mystics.
But anyway, do you know why they had more than two?
Because they had to have that many people inside to make them move?
Nope, for copyright reasons. That way Brian Froud could keep the copyright to his own artwork, and Jim Henson can have the copyright to his created artwork for the Dark Crystal.
Because it was unique.
Yeah, separate thing.
All right.
Apparently the Skeksis also had the second sets of arms that you really only saw when they took off Chamberlain's clothes, because they were kind of like wizened little things. I mean, the Skeksis
T-Rex arms.
Yeah, the Skeksis are beautiful in that they look like vultures, and the Mystics to me look a lot more like reptilian.
Oh, they look like Snuffleupagus.
They look like iguana or Komodo dragon kind of things.
Kind of a mix of all the above.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had sort of like reptilian and equine.
Yeah, a little bit. They go into it just a little bit, a la Nightbreed, by the way, where you get in the flashback scene, you see the Gelfling Holocaust. I mean,
it's true.
This movie is as rich as you want to make it. But yeah, Jen thinks he's the only Gelfling left. And now he's, he's had a good life. He's had a good life. But now he's being called upon to fulfill this prophecy.
He's actually being cast out, really.
Kind of, yeah. So we actually see that the Emperor of the Skeksis is an old, wizened, and yet still scary guy. And he's about to die. And that's where we meet Chamberlain, who is our... He's not the main Skeksi, but he's the Skeksi that we like the best, I think. He's the only Skeksi with a really story arc, kind of.
Yeah, he gets the most screen time of any other Skeksis.
Yeah. Is it Skeksis is singular and plural?
Or is it a
Skeksi singular and Skeksis plural? Like, if you see one Skeksi, do you call them a Skeksi or do you call them a Skeksis?
A skein of Skeksis. I don't know.
I want Skeksis.
Like Japanese? You don't call them one Japanese? Maybe not. Anyway, so we have Chamberlain.
Okay, so Skeksis is both singular and plural.
Oh, good to know.
Back up. So Skeksis, so they're both spelled the same, but Skeksis for singular and Skeksis, Z sound for plural.
It's as rich as you want to make it. So Chamberlain, who is voiced by Barry Denon, who is most notably Pontius Pilate in the film Jesus Christ Superstar.
Nice.
So Chamberlain and the general, who I don't know the name of, both want to be the emperor. And so they decide to duel using, like, what they used a phrase that I can't remember. Something with the stones. Decide with the stones.
Trial by stone.
Yeah, trial by stone.
Trial by stone.
Oh, okay. Which is pretty great. I love it. It's super violent without being directly violent. It's perfect for kids.
Yeah, no, the direct violence and rapiness comes after.
Yeah, well, rapiness. Well, okay, well, we'll get there. The death of the emperor is pretty great. It's scary. I mean, the whole emperor yes. is fantastic. And the fact that the Skeksis and the Mystics are like one-to-one aligned in a way is all part of it, because when the emperor dies, the corresponding Mystic also vanishes or disappears or whatever. And now we have a new emperor, and the Skeksis find out about Jen, and Jen is told to go seek the crystal to the astronomer, and that's Agura. And
Agra. Who I thought was Oprah, by the way.
that's after they ripped off all of Chamberlain's clothes.
Yes, when Chamberlain lost, he is cast aside and they take all of his clothes off, so he is defrocked. Literally.
A very disturbing scene for little children, as it turns out.
More disturbing than the emperor dying?
Yeah, because it's not obvious why they're doing it. But there is a, you know, there's a feeling of something really bad is happening to him. I mean, he is screaming like they're murdering him while they're all surrounding him or ripping his clothes off.
Oh, see, I just saw it as taking his vestments off. I didn't see it as being like moleste.
No, they were violating him.
Yeah.
You're putting adult reasoning in, though.
That's all I have to work with.
I'm just saying.
You're right. So what do we think about Agra's, what is it called?
Planetarium?
Yeah, there's a word for it.
Yeah, I don't know what's Ori? Called.
I think it's Ori.
I thought it was amazing.
Oh, it was great.
I loved the whole scene and all the choreography they had to do around it.
Oh, it's just beautiful. I mean, I love everything from her eyeball, which I think is fantastic. To all the choreography around this gigantic machine, to her character itself is fantastic, because she's sort of she's not aligned, she's not involved in the Skeksis Mystics thing. She just sees the future.
No, she does not give a crap.
Exactly, which is great.
And she takes no shit.
Yes, also great.
But also, Jen is like Angela Lansbury, because everywhere he goes, somebody ends up dying.
Yeah, he's a little bit of a bad luck charm in this movie.
Yeah.
Although, again, he's got his hero's journey. It's all going to be fraught with peril. I even like the fact that the vines that grab him at Agra's house. It's just beautiful. All of the scenery is fantastic in this movie.
Well, there was a lot of work.
All the little like spongy tentacle things that all disappeared when he got close by.
Oh yeah. Oh, it's so rich.
It's very, very elaborate.
And then the Skeksis have sent their Garthim.
The Garthim Brookham.
To go and bring Jen back, or is it to kill it or bring Jen back? They just want him killed, right?
I think so.
And the Garthim are legitimately scary. sort of a lobster spider sort of thing that is very reminiscent of, or perhaps it was ripped off by...
of the Meyer Lurks.
What are the Meyer Lurks?
From Fallout.
Oh, I'm thinking more of the Star Wars guys. The little, God, is it from the second movie? The little roll-up black droids at shotguns? Maybe it's in the first. Oh. The yeah. Phantom Menace.
Yeah, the one that they were like shielded.
Yes.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. I always had more of like a creepy giant dung beetle vibe out of these guys.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. Well, actually, I think they actually literally came up with the idea after eating a lobster dinner. And the costumes, the costumes are so heavy that the actors who are inside the costumes, they actually had like a little like hoist to lift them up off the ground to take the weight off of them in between takes.
Yeah, it looks heavy. Like it has a weight to it. You can tell just by watching.
Yes.
So yeah. I've sent you a picture of a Meyer Lurk. Boyfriend Jesse pointed out, and I agree with him, that the Meyer Lurk that was used in Fallout looks remarkably like these creatures.
Okay.
Or look like they could have very easily been inspired by.
Well, crab things are scary.
Yeah.
So we have this whole thing where every piece of this movie is creepy, and I love it. Like, Agra is creepy in her own way, and, you know, her whole, like,
takes out her eyeball so she can look higher.
Yeah.
It's freaky.
When the Gartham show up, it's legitimate mayhem. I mean, they come in and they destroy everything and burn down her house and her machine.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's another scary part.
But luckily, Jen escaped with the shard.
Yes, he divined the shard through the use of his crazy flute, but that's okay.
How'd you guys deal with the pan flute in this movie,
Jason? It wasn't too bad. It was brief, so right. It was acceptable.
Are you not a pan flute fanatic?
I got burned out of Zamfir in the 80s.
Oh. Every time I think of the Chariots of Fire theme, think of Zamfir, master of the pan flute.
Because of his version?
Yeah, those commercials.
Okay.
Between that and the Jim Neighbors Sings commercials, I just remember that. Heavy rotation.
This famous TV acting star is loved by countless millions as Gomer Pyle, but now he's also loved as America's romantic recording star. Has already won 4 gold record awards. And now, we proudly offer the most beautiful recordings ever made by Jim Neighbors.
And honey, I miss you.
Yes, here is all the heart-touching magic of Jim Neighbors in one exclusive collection.
Come and lay down by my side.
Send $7.98 for album, $9.98 for tape to Jim Neighbors, Box 1616, Grand Central Station, New York, New York, 10163. Or phone now, toll free, 1-800-241-8444.
Jim Neighbors. See? Never mind.
So, the Mystics begin their trek toward the castle, the big, scary, dark crystal castle where the dark crystal lives and the Skeksis live.
I love that castle design.
It's what everything Tim Burton wants to be, isn't that castle design? If it was just slightly curlier.
Yes. I bet Tim Burton loves this movie.
I bet he does. So, Jen ends up meeting with Kira, who's another Gelfling, and they each thought they were the only one.
Well, this was after a small trek through the forest.
Yes.
Which is important because I never got past the forest in the computer game.
Yeah, the computer game was confounding.
It was impossible.
Yeah. Was it one of those Zork-type games?
But with graphics.
Oh. It had, like, it had really super low-res graphics.
Yeah. Mm.
So
essentially, yeah.
Yeah, so they end up meeting.
I guess same mechanics. You had to that and Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Yeah, another impossible game.
Mm-hmm.
Never get past a fucking babblefish. Yeah, so we have these other characters where we actually meet Fizzgig first, who is a little bit scary and then turns out to be comic relief. And this, by the way, there was a little bit of thought behind Fizzgig too. The idea was that Fizzgig was a little bit of boyfriend repellent. Because there was a common belief that that a way to like, I don't know if it's a way to get a man or whatever, was to have a dog. And so Jim Henson was going directly against that idea. Or maybe it was a way to get a woman is to have a dog. I don't, whatever it was. There was a dog or some sort of pet was thought as a way to attract a mate. He's like, no, this is actually, like, again, it's boyfriend repellent. Yeah, sorry. Anyway, not all stories are interesting. Tangent over. So they end up sharing memories called dream fasting. And they both relive the Holocaust from their own perspectives.
It's so terrifying.
It is. Because, you know, Jen actually got the good end of the deal. He just got adopted by the mystics. And Kira had to hide in a closet a la Anne Frank. And then the podlings took her in. The potato people. And then they spend the night with the podlings, Jen and Kira. And the Garthim come and raid their village, too. So, yeah, nobody wants Jen to visit.
Yeah, and in this scene, they don't only raid the village and destroy it. I'm not even sure they're looking for the Gelflings, right? They're just there to kidnap podlings and turn them into slaves.
Oh, it's bad. Turns out life under the Skeksis is a bad deal. And actually, the Skeksis should see Jen coming from the top of their big tower because they should just see the fires across the landscape getting closer and closer.
The carnage on the map as it approaches.
So Jen and Kira discover a ruined Gelfling city with ancient writing and the prophecy. And they figure out, and by the way, this is the only part of the movie that I don't particularly like, and that's the fact that the way to solve this whole problem is to repair the crystal. Like, you can't repair a crystal. You can't heal a crystal. It's magical. Yeah, I guess.
You can make it whole.
I suppose.
It's magical and mystical. Are you kidding? The little super purple light rays make it all right.
Oh, no, it's great. I don't mind it. I just that this the thing that has always kind of irritated me was that you can't heal crystals. Oh, well.
That's so, what irritated you?
Yeah, that's my only complaint out of the whole movie. So, as their trek continues, they're interrupted by Chamberlain, who just wants to make peace.
Well, he says he wants to make peace.
Well, exactly. So, the question, okay, maybe I wasn't paying close enough attention at the end of this movie. Is Chamberlain, is he a bad guy in this whole thing?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
He tried to kill Jen.
Well, there's that.
His whole goal was to try and get the Gelfling to use his leverage to get himself into power.
Yeah.
So he was like Machiavellian.
Yeah, he wanted to ascend the emperorship or whatever it was.
Hmm. Okay. Luckily, though, they don't trust him. Because, you know, there may only be two Gelflings left and they're not going to risk it. So they get to ride on Landstriders, which are these weirdo, reminded me a little bit of Fury Road.
Fury Road definitely ripped off the Dark Crystal.
Yeah, because the Landstriders were like these bunnies with stilts. Anyway, pretty great.
Yeah, I called them spider bunnies.
Yeah.
They're creepy.
Spider bunny, you're the one.
Also, if you want to see something creepy, you should look up the spider experiments by NASA.
No. Oh, is it have to do with drugs?
Or no, space? It has to do with them building webs in outer space.
Yeah, okay, that's fine.
With no gravity.
Yeah.
And watching them descend and eat bugs because there's no gravity, so they can just...
Interesting.
Yeah.
Who got to be the spider wrangler on the...
It's kind of terrifying.
Hmm. So, they arrive at the Skeksis castle. The Garthim are back. And they try to... By the way, we see this thing where the doctor, the Skeksi doctor or whatever, the mad doctor...
Dr. Mengele.
Yeah, exactly. And like one of his eyes is a flashlight or whatever. That's great.
Well, I think he has like a jeweler's awl.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Like a loop?
You're talking about when they use the power of the dark crystal to suck the souls out of the podlings and turn them into slaves?
Yes. And drink the juices? Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, a little frightening?
So creepy.
Yeah. Great stuff.
Yes.
It's got like... sort of sci-fi, like serial peril kind of thing, like Lone Ranger sort of, well, not like, more like Buck Rogers kind of peril.
Soylent Green is made from people.
Yeah, that is a movie we'll need to, well, maybe not.
Have you seen
Soylent Green? Terrifying enough when you have to watch an anonymous podling get his life juices sucked out of him, but then, it's really horrifying when Kira is then strapped into the chair.
Oh,
she's
yeah.
about to have it happen to her.
No, the bondage chair is awesome.
Yeah, and she's like all ashy with like sunken dark eyes for the rest of the movie.
Yeah, she's like heroin addict.
Escapes, yeah. Like she looks rough.
It's Kira from Trainspotting.
So, yeah, well, she lost a little weight. She's
all of a sudden, a little tiny mystic is crawling across the ceiling.
So we have the
sorry, we lost Jason for a second.
You shouldn't hide it. It's an audio medium.
Is it because you pictured the three arms?
I was picturing the three arms, and then I was picturing them falling into the carpet.
Oh. Sorry, I can't get deep enough. Yeah, we have the suns aligning. We've got breaking Kira out of the she breaks herself out because she can talk to animals. We got Fizzgig involved in this whole thing. We got... Agra.
She not only breaks out, she kills the Dr. Skeksis.
Yes.
Well, by the animals.
Yeah. It's great though.
Yeah.
Again, a very complex scene with all the animals.
Well, and I think it was it Frood that said, you know, it's one thing when you have puppets, because puppets can do everything but walk and talk. But the problem with puppets is they can't interact with objects necessarily. They can't throw something or move something. So it was difficult to figure out how to engineer things where it had big scenes of lots of things moving back and forth, because the puppets couldn't really do that because the people were too busy holding the puppets. They couldn't hold the puppet and throw something. So
I love that just a detail I wanted to throw back to the Skeksis eating scene. They had the little the little finger forks. I want those. I want the little finger utensils where each of them are like a... Anyway.
It's really a good idea. It seems super efficient.
It does. Yeah. Except my birthday is coming up. I'm just saying. Yeah. I mean, we basically have, the end of the end of the movie is the big old scene. Actually, it's sort of... Again, it's a dark moment. Where when Kira throws the shard to Jen, who's on top of the crystal, and yet Kira is fatally stabbed by the general, right?
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah. And she stays dead for a long time. I mean.
Well, death is forever.
Yeah.
She's dead.
Yeah. So.
Until she's not.
Yeah. But yeah, so when Jen fulfills the prophecy. And the mystics enter the chamber, then the castle starts to crumble, and there's all sorts of crazy commotion. And turns out the mystics and the Skeksis have merged back into the original their original form, which is known, at least in the novelization and in the script, as the Urskeks. Anyway, so there's a little monologue at the end by the Urskek commander, whatever, leader. And this is where it gets a little preachy at the end. And everybody has come together instead of being divided. And they decide to raise Kira from the dead in appreciation. And then do they ascend to heaven?
They go somewhere.
Yeah. And yeah,
I think that's up to interpretation.
And so now Jen and Kira are Adam and Eve for the Gelflings, right?
In theory.
Yeah.
Yes.
Unless Gelflings lay eggs and pollinate them or whatever, fertilize them. God knows.
Engage the services of the pod people.
Yeah, who knows? The podlings. Anyway, so it's a pretty simple story. But I think it's perfect for kids, even though I don't know any kids who want to watch it at the moment. But I certainly enjoyed it. I loved it for its
a little bit older kids.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so many of the little touches that stayed with me, like when Jen finds out Kira has wings and he's like, "Oh, I don't have wings." And she just kind of puts him in his place. And she's like, "Of course not. You're a boy."
Yeah, it's hilarious.
Like that, just that little touch always stuck with me.
And this isn't their storytelling. Like I said, you can make this backstory as rich as you want. They thought a lot about it, even though it wasn't necessarily spoken in the movie. There's no exposition for it all. But unlike Dune, which had way too much exposition. Too much exposition
that you didn't need. I'm sure they could have dumped a whole crap load of the history of this world on you, but you didn't need it.
Exactly.
This was not necessary.
Because you're only seeing a story through a certain lens. Like a shard of a crystal, for instance. One facet of the entire thing. Anyway, I don't know. So, Brother Jay, any more notes? Do you want to render your verdict?
Kira talking to the animal sounded like she was trying to make a phone call because she constantly had this ringing noise.
Or she's trying to connect to a dial-up.
Yeah. Or she was a car alarm.
The original plan was for, I think, the Gelflings to speak English, but the Skeksis to speak Greek, maybe, and the Mystics to speak Egyptian. But then they scrapped that because it would be like you'd have to have subtitles and things explained, and yeah, it made no sense. It was better the way they did it.
Yeah.
So, do you have a verdict?
I'd give it a B.
What did boyfriend Jesse think?
He thought it was pretty good. For having seen it the first time, he wasn't quite sure what to make of it entirely. Because from his movie going experience, it's hard to conceptualize that was the technology at the time. That was the best that there was in many instances. So it ages okay. I wouldn't say it ages great, but he even didn't fall asleep, which is, that's an achievement. So
he's not going to go get a dark crystal tattoo.
I really doubt it. But roommate Derek actually sat in the living room and watched the whole thing, which is very unusual for him because normally he doesn't have any interest at all. But when he saw that I bought the DVD, he was like, "What are you going to watch that?" And I said, "Well,
he was into the dark crystal, huh?"
He goes, "You have to tell me. I haven't seen that in years." And so he actually sat through the whole thing. And then when it was over, he goes, "I don't remember being that scary as a kid."
Yeah, that's the thing, is things aren't as scary directly.
No, he said, "That should have scared the shit out of me when I was little," but it clearly didn't.
There's not as much scary content.
Again, I think that's perspective, though. Because there are some legitimately terrifying moments.
No, in this movie?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, no, no. What I mean is right now in like the state of the art for kids entertainment that I've seen, there's nothing that approaches this level of darkness. There's sometimes there's like cartoons that can throw in some like almost subliminal messages, like asides and stuff that's mostly meant for adults, I think. But there's not really anything that I can think of that approaches this level of darkness. Like, they water things down for kids a lot these days.
Yeah, I think you're right.
But
perhaps.
Is it ice watering down?
No.
Okay.
It would be funny if I had an ice maker in here, wouldn't it?
No, I was listening for Drew. I thought Drew had an ice maker thing, but maybe not. Nope. So, Drew, was it worth it?
Yeah, this is one of my all-time favorite movies. I think it holds up. You know, I can't really separate out the nostalgia I have for it. But if I were to try, I think it still holds up. It's really interesting to watch a movie made in this manner, you know, without just relying on CGI to create this fantasy environment. You know, doing it practically using, you know, the Muppet technology, using people in elaborate costumes, and crafting it all together cinematically, is really, really interesting now. We don't get this kind of movie, anymore. There is a TV series coming to Netflix called The Dark Crystal: Age of Resistance. It's supposed to be a prequel. And I don't know what that's going to be. I don't know if that's going to be a cartoon.
It's like the Gelfling Wars before the Holocaust.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm looking forward to seeing what they do with it. But I mean, this movie was really right in my wheelhouse. I like the Muppets okay. I loved Fraggle Rock. Yeah, I loved horror movies, so having like a Muppet dark fantasy was just perfect for me, and it's always stuck with me. I think about this movie more than I should, but this movie is a touchstone for me, so I definitely think it's worth it. I hope that when my children are a little bit older that they can enjoy it. But again, I don't know. Maybe it's a boy versus a girl thing too. I don't know. But yeah, I would encourage anybody to watch this movie. When I used to do field work and have to go to remote places, I would take a pack of DVDs with me. And sometimes I'd watch them by myself. Sometimes I'd watch them with the crew. This movie was one I took with me, and I was not ashamed to bring it out and recommend that my team watch it. So yeah, I love this movie. I was really happy to watch it again, especially the version that Jason gave us, because it is beautiful.
Oh, it's gorgeous. You talked about the Fraggle Rock. One of the original things they were going to do, things we were going to do originally was have Jen and Kira go to the underworld to make their little trek. And that's where they'd encounter like basically the Fraggles. So since they cut out that part, they repurposed the Fraggles for Fraggle Rock.
Loved Fraggle Rock.
Ah, me too. I loved the Muppets. I'm a child of Sesame Street, and the Muppet movie was great. I mean, I could probably still watch the Muppet movie, and the jokes are corny, but I still like the Muppets. You know, the Muppet Show and all of its iterations is hit or miss, but still fun. I can't be completely objective because I just have a fondness for the Muppets.
When was the last time you watched the Muppet Show, though? It holds up pretty well.
Well, they have so many different characters, and I mean, they sort of did commentary on themselves.
Well, and you know, when you look back at Sesame Street, Sesame Street had some, I mean, subversive is not quite the right word, but some fun stuff. And I'm sure some of it is just goofy stuff too, but there was, you know, like little things that have, I don't know, I love every part of the Henson universe, and I love fucking Emmett Otter's Jugman Christmas. This is great. Even though it's got kind of a Gift of the Magi thing going on with the hole in the washtub, but still. Yeah, so I really enjoyed this too. I was a little disappointed that my daughter was not all that interested in it. I was watching it on my iPod, so I was sort of trying to show it, little parts of it to her, saying, hey, look at this, isn't that cool? And she was like, yeah, that's fine, that's great, yeah, moving on. Okay. But since she's kind of sort of a scaredy cat these days for movies, like we had to walk out of Coco, I figured she couldn't really handle it without preparation of some kind.
So do either of your wives have memories of this movie?
I don't know. Good question. Don't know. I'll have to ask.
Yeah, my wife, she likes the movie okay. She didn't have quite the same affinity for it that I do, but she remembered watching it as a little kid. She never played the computer game, though, so...
Yeah.
I think that was a boss's game.
Could have been.
It was made Apple. For the Apple II, so...
Yeah,
I'm sure we played it on our bosses. Yeah. 108.
Cutting edge. The thing weighed like 50 pounds or something.
Did I tell you about trying to get my wife's iPhone screen repaired?
Oh, no.
Yeah, so she dropped her phone at work and it landed on a tile. And she has a case on it, but it dropped perfectly flat on the screen. And when she picked it up, it was shattered like a spider web.
Wow.
And we only have one Apple store in Anchorage, and it's in the Fifth Avenue Mall, and it's impossible to get an appointment there, you know, except like a week out. Ugh. But we also have a Mac store, which is more conveniently located, in the old Denny's building off of Diamond.
Yeah, I remember it. So it's not an Apple store, but it's a affiliate. So they can do work on iPhones?
Yeah. So you can actually make an appointment through the Apple Store app at there. So I did that and I went in there and it's really like a hole in the wall, single dude shop. And I went in there and told him why I was there. He's like, oh, I don't actually have any iPhone 7 screens in stock. So sorry.
Oh, that's lame.
And he was trying to talk to me about options, but I could not pay any attention to him because he had a working Apple II GS on the shelf. And I was like, that's an Apple II GS. He's like, oh yeah, that's also signed by Wozniak.
Wozniak.
I was like, what? And I went over and I think he was a little nervous because I went like I had my two little ones with me. And at that point, I was like, ah, they're just doing whatever. And I went to go look at the computer. He's like, please don't touch. I was like, what do you think I'm going to do? I just want to see it. I just want to be close to it.
It's the shrine.
Yeah, I was ridiculously excited to see it. Lots of fun memories.
It was a great machine. It was, I remember all of the triumphs and travails with that attached to the Image Writer 2 and trying to get reports out of it.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. I turned in lots and lots and lots of schoolwork on that. Having things like fully justified.
Yeah.
Yes.
And print shop.
Oh yeah, banners.
It's
what are you,
baffling.
What are you doing down there? I'm just printing out a banner. Why?
Ink is expensive.
I don't know why.
The box of tractor-fed paper.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. And having all the tractor strips left.
Yeah.
Yep.
I remember that was going
turning in homework with raggedy edges from the perforations.
Yes. Oh, it's great.
Hey, when I had my first real job at Fred Meyer, and it was, I had to print reports every morning off of the dot matrix printers, I would have stacks of paper that was, you know, 3 or 4 inches thick, which is where you learn that you can, if you hold that tractor for the paper together, you can peel it off the sides just in one giant strip.
Mm.
So.
Do either of you remember one of those, like cracked games that maybe Eric brought home from school? That was
Azteca.
I love Azteca. I think it was just Aztec.
Oh, maybe it was just Aztec.
Yeah, Aztec and Montezuma's Revenge and the Conan game.
Yes.
But the one that I've been thinking about recently is, do you remember the ICBM game?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, listening to the book I'm listening to now, that's a really fucking dark concept for a computer game.
You mean like the Missile Command sort of game?
Yeah, but you were actually, I don't remember if the whole point was to blow up ICBMs, but maybe that was like sort of the boss battle of every level was you had to destroy the ICBMs while dodging other stuff.
Well, then there was also Zany Golf.
Oh, I mean, there was lots of fun games with the GS.
The King of Chicago, right?
Oh, man.
That was, yeah, shooting people in the windows.
That's ridiculous.
That wasn't for the Mac? I thought that was for the Mac.
It might have been.
The Postal, that was for the Mac too, right?
Yeah, Postal was for the Mac.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah.
Anyway. So, do we have housekeeping? I'm happy to make it short.
I'd love to talk about Dead Hand at some point, but we don't have to do it tonight.
Okay, I mean, I haven't started it yet, but you certainly can.
Well, Drew, how far into it are you?
Like 1983.
Oh, you have it on audiobook?
I do.
I think it's 20 hours. So how you think you're maybe 6-7 hours in?
Nah, probably closer to 4.
It's a terrifying book.
Yeah. Here's what really struck me just in the initial going, and maybe it's because I was a little bit younger. But when I think of the Cold War, like I have definitely romanticized it in my memory. Because I think about the fact it's a Cold War. So I think about how, you know, there wasn't any real combat. And it was all like spy craft and spy versus spy. But what this book is highlighting to me that I do not think about was it was also the nuclear proliferation and the arms race and the doctrine of mutually assured destruction, which, of course, I was aware of. But when you actually talk about what that means, that's crazy.
Yeah,
that's crazy that was the going philosophy for decades. That the only deterrent is that the other side will be destroyed too. And what a radical notion it was when Reagan was like, I want to protect our people, not avenge our people.
Yeah. Well,
and his cabinet was like, that, no.
Well, that's the thing. That's where Dr. what are you talking about? Is all about, you know?
Yeah. I still haven't seen that movie.
Oh, you know what? We need to do that movie again.
Yeah.
Especially after with this political context and actually the politics we're living through.
Jason, I don't know if you remember the description of like Reagan's first like tabletop exercise. That's terrifying.
Uh-huh. Well, the Russians exercise where they were like, now you're sure this is just a drill? Because we want to make sure that we're not, you know, this is a drill, that we're not actually launching something. Oh, well, we think it's disconnected. What do you mean you think? Well, we're pretty sure. No. You can't be pretty sure everything's disconnected. It has to be fake. So, but the scarier thing for me so far, I mean, and I'm still thinking about it. I mean, I finished the book a couple days ago, but it has been, it's really weighed on my mind because.
Is it like, hot zone scary?
I think what really actually made, I actually had a couple moments listening to it where I literally felt my blood run cold. Like I had this moment, and I remember I was standing in the kitchen and I had to stop because one of the descriptions was just how close everything was and knowing that had something happened, like none of us would even be here right now. Like nothing. We would have been wiped off of the map. And that it was just a matter of a couple minutes of communication that stopped something from happening. And when you think about that, it drives you crazy. I mean, it's chilling when the destiny of an entire hemisphere hinged on the ability of two people to communicate freely who didn't even really understand each other and necessarily have the same philosophy and had entire political machines that were antagonistic, that didn't care, that were only interested in insulating themselves in as much as they thought that they were, you know, might makes right. Which is all well and good until everybody's dead. So, and then the other part that terrified me was the fact that it wasn't just the Cold War. It was the fact that the Russians were also using that as subterfuge to distract from the entire bioweapons that they were developing, including their own smallpox lab.
Yeah. Well, that's Demon in the Freezer.
So, holy shit. I mean, smallpox is just...
I will refer you to the book Demon in the Freezer. If you haven't read it, it's great.
Yeah, I haven't even gotten further, but I'm already starting to extrapolate in my mind that the Soviet Union relied heavily on technology, like for early warning systems, and their history of producing reliable technology is not great. I mean, they're the country that created the RBMK 1000 reactor.
Which they talk about.
Which is a shitty concept from the very beginning.
They also talk about
Chernobyl?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Yeah.
They also talk about the KAL-007 flight.
That they shot out of the sky?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So there's lots of interesting little facets of the book that I didn't realize were tangentially kind of all related.
But well, okay. Does it change your opinion on what we should do, if anything, about Syria?
I don't know that it changes my opinion, but, it certainly makes me yes and no. I don't have a concise answer for it.
Yeah, that's okay. Syria is a problem with no concise answer.
It gives me much more pause, simply because I think the book made it very clear that what saved a lot of what was going on was the fact that both leaders finally just said, we're going to back up for a little bit and we're going to kind of just cool this out and see where it goes. And by bypassing cabinets and intermediaries and agencies, when the two leaders got together and could just communicate, that was one of the better ways to have handled it, because there wasn't wrangling and there wasn't necessarily a politicization of the process. It was just two leaders trying to get both countries through so that we didn't end up in some kind of Holocaust. But it's tough, man. It was a tough book. I don't know what possessed me.
It's got a snappy title.
Well, and I have another book that's coming up as soon as I'm finished with the one I have.
By the way, I can't wait for you to catch up on The Americans.
Yeah. So my next book is The Radium Girls. The other thing that really that I kind of had to laugh at was that the Russians at one point were stealing American technology, and it wasn't as much as they wanted our technology because they wanted to get the jump on us. It was that the Stalin-era autocrats and people in charge in Russia had told the Russian complex, perform or we will kill you. And so it wasn't that they wanted to surpass America. They just knew that America's shit would work. And if they stole the plans for it, they could build something that worked. But you'll get to a part of the book where they're talking about they walk into a room full of wooden bins of stuff, and one guy takes a sample out to take a sample of metal and starts like hacking a piece off of it, and it starts sparking, and it's enriched plutonium.
Wonderful.
So they're like, ooh, we maybe need to rethink this.
Well, it's that last book, the Atomic Accidents book. I'm still haunted by the guy that killed everybody in the room showing off with the screwdriver.
Yeah, so.
And the book doesn't explicitly say it, but I think there's an inference that Reagan killed Andropov by causing him so much stress.
Oh, it wouldn't surprise me.
I think that's the implication.
But they also talk about the Russian coup, which is pretty interesting. So there's a pretty wide gamut of topics in the book that aren't necessarily directly nuclear arms related, but they're related in as much as they're all woven together by the same system, which is pretty fascinating, which is why you get Chernobyl and you get KAL-007, you get the Russian coup, you get smallpox.
But does it make you scary about our president?
Oh, yes.
Like when people are making jokes about part of General Kelly's jobs is if something bad happens, he has to tackle the president so he doesn't push the button. Yeah. I mean, that's scary stuff.
It makes me happy Reagan was president when he was, because he was the perfect guy to take on the Soviet Union. He really had a vision for how to win the Cold War.
Yeah. And I realize that Reagan is something of a mythical figure now, kind of a Kennedy-esque figure. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I mean, there was a lot of good there. Plenty of other stuff, too, but that's okay. We don't have to have that conversation.
I would say that the book goes to a pretty good effort of explaining that Reagan's goal was that he saw what nuclear weapons could do, and that it just had to be stopped because it wasn't acceptable.
Yeah, well, and I guess I'll read the book before we have a more thorough discussion on that. But there's one thing to have somebody that talks tough, like a cowboy president, rather than somebody who's more appeasement, like maybe Jimmy Carter. But there's a difference between talking tough and being a lunatic, like our current president.
Yes, indeed.
Send your feedback to show@notinthecreepyway.com or call us on our new voicemail account to leave voice messages, or you can text us at this account to leave text messages. The number is 425-243-9169. That's 425-243-9169. What are you waiting for? Put it in your phone right now, and then when you listen to an episode, you can just hit your contacts. Dial it already.